Well, it's time for Chapter 11. If you've been with us over the past several weeks, we've been usually doing this on Thursday. Been trying to get it in before noon, but I had some other concerns that put this off till about 3:30. At least that's when I'm starting this recording. That central time. Quick note from last week, I don't know if anyone else noticed it, but I did have at least one comment that there's a name change on the stuffed dog that Hope brought down with her from at breakfast time there at the Stevens household. That's one of the things when you're doing a work in progress like I'm doing here that sometimes is going to happen. I won't catch it. In fact, I did catch it shortly after I had put the recording in the can, so to speak. But, again, that's something that's going to happen, especially with a work in progress. Speaking of which, there are some... there are going to be times in which... we're going to be revising some things either on the fly or maybe even before they get there. Right now I'm trying to keep ahead of where the story is in my writing it, and I'm doing a pretty good job of it so far. Anyway, we're on Epiphany, Chapter 11. After breakfast in town, FBI agent James Hamner took Dan Stevens back to his temporary home away from home. He waited on the front porch while the pastor showered and made himself presentable. "Still have a while before the artist I've called in arrives. While you were in the shower, I called Agent Barada. He's been in contact with your wife. I'll call her myself later. In the meantime, let me tell you what I'm up against. What we're up against." James waited for Dan to get comfortable, or at least as comfortable as one could get on the cold metal chairs in the front porch of the cabin, before starting his story. "I've been investigating a series of church fires in five states here in the past 18 months. The fires happen at small, either Baptist or non-denominational churches in small towns and rural counties." "I've heard about other church fires in other places," Dan interrupted. "The fires getting the publicity are fires set at predominantly black churches. The fires I'm investigating have all been set in churches with predominantly white congregations," James explained. "At first it was thought that the pastors of those churches were all under stress to the point where burning down their church seemed to be a logical choice to ease the pressure. I was called in because of my father. The Bureau thought that I might be in a unique position to investigate. One of the first things I noted was the pattern. All of the fires seemed to start in the pastor's study before rapidly spreading to the rest of the church. Well, the Bureau was right. I was in a unique position, but it was because of my experience in the Army, not because of the sins of my father. Every time there was another fire, we spent hours interviewing pastors and just about anyone else we could think of. There was never a link to any of the fires until now." "Well, I'm the only pastor who's been in the area at more than one fire, I take it," Dan remarked. "You hit the nail on the head, sir," James responded. "That makes you suspect, except for the fact that you've pretty much stayed in Magnolia ever since you arrived to take over. At least that's as far as our file on you tells us." "Bob Barada did a pretty good job of talking with just about everyone in town," Dan told the agent. "Magnolia is a pretty close community. When someone sneezes at one end of the town, there's a chorus of blessings starting from the other." "Well, still there's the fact that you're in the area. The sheriff here was ready to judge you guilty and have you thrown in the hoosegow just based on your being here." "How did he know so quickly?" "It seems he got an anonymous tip while the fire was at its peak. It might have been your man, the one we stopped and looked for at the restaurant." A signal on Agent Hamner's cell phone interrupted their conversation while he looked at a text message and then responded. "That was Beasley, my sketch artist. She just got into town. I told her to come up here. She'll be here in half an hour," James told Dan. "Can I hit the John while we're waiting?" Dan waited while Agent Hamner took care of some personal business. When he returned, they engaged in small talk while waiting for Beasley. James's father had been an Episcopal priest in a New York parish. His son described him as being full of joy on the outside but filled with inner demons. His father's death was not altogether unexpected. He fought off depression with food, ignoring his chronic high blood pressure and a few other borderline health problems. "I love my dad," James admitted to Pastor Dan. "I've determined to help other pastors by giving them my support in my off time. This assignment marks the first time where my career and my passion have come together." What's my passion? What's my career? And are they one and the same? The question swirled around in Dan's head while James went off in a different direction. Beasley arrived shortly before 11. She was a petite woman, no more than 5'3", wearing a head of thick, black, short-cropped hair. She appeared carrying a laptop and a portable printer in addition to a case containing artist supplies. James stayed while Dan gave Beasley as much information as he could about the man he'd seen. Within a few minutes, she came up with a reasonable sketch, which she then scanned into her laptop. She showed Dan her drawing so that he could have a good look at the face. "It's a remarkable resemblance to the man I saw," Dan said after carefully examining Beasley's work. She smiled at the compliment, then posted the sketch she scanned over the internet. Since it was lunchtime, Dan suggested they go grab a bite to eat, a suggestion both agents readily agreed upon. Beasley suggested a place further down the valley, a pizza joint called BJ's. They drove in two cars. Beasley drove ahead of James, turning into the dirt and gravel parking lot, where only three other cars were parked at the time. Once they stopped, Dan got out while James stayed to take a call on his cell phone. Beasley motioned for Dan to follow her into the restaurant. BJ's was just one of several restaurants in the valley which relied on the tourist trade. In the winter, skiers from two different resorts would flood the place with talk of winter sports and conditions on the slopes. In summer, people came from the metropolitan areas on the East Coast to escape the heat. BJ's was in the summer mode, meaning most of their business came from families looking for relatively inexpensive family fare. Dan and Beasley placed an order for a pair of pepperoni pizzas and three drinks, then sat down for light conversation. "There's something unsettling about her." Dan could hardly take his eyes off of Agent Beasley. For some reason, he felt shame at feeling no shame about wanting to know this woman better. Something he wasn't sure what seemed to draw him to her. Her mannerisms? The way she spoke? Her laugh? He made a point of telling her about his children, hoping to dispel his increasing interest in the agent. No matter how hard he tried, he still felt a strong attraction to this woman who came into his life less than an hour and a half earlier. Somehow she seemed not to care about all the other aspects of his life. She continued to weave her spell on him until James came to join them at the table. "Well, Barada's been on the phone to the sheriff's office," he informed them. "He's having trouble trying to convince the sheriff that you have a clean bill of health. I need you to go over to Parsons." "No, scratch that. I need to get over to Parsons and get the sheriff straightened out before he decides to send a posse to arrest you." "Wish I could stay at least a little bit longer and pour your drink," Dan suggested. "I need to get going," James told them. "You two can sit at the cabin when you're finished here, when you're finished here. I'll be up later this afternoon once I've had a talk with the sheriff and the county judge." James paused just long enough to take his empty cup over to the soft drink machine and fill it before heading out the door. For a fleeting moment, Dan thought about following his new friend to ride with him to see the sheriff. He felt as if Beasley's will held him back. "You're worried," she said once James left. "It's me, isn't it?" Dan wasn't sure how to respond. Yes, it was her. He was afraid that she might try to lure him away from his family. Yet, part of him needed to be lured away. "It's not you, it's something else," he told her. It was her. He told a lie, or was that a fib? The chain of events was momentarily interrupted by the entrance of a couple with their two small children. "Don't hit your sister. Jesus sees you hitting your sister, and he doesn't like it." The mother was no older than he was. She was at least 50 pounds overweight and seemed to lord her size over her charges. The husband quietly assented to the woman's demands on her suffering children. Dan was reminded of Jacob and Peter at that age. They would occasionally have minor tiffs with each other, but both he and Emily were able to get the boys to settle their difficulties with patience and a dose of love. The husband and his children placed their order while the mother pulled out her cell phone. She didn't want to participate in her children's lives. She didn't wish to be inconvenienced. "I like to go hiking up here." Beasley placed herself directly in Dan's attention. "How far is your cabin from the ridge trail?"
"A quarter mile, maybe," he replied. "If you have the time, I can take you up when we leave here."
Emily wouldn't mind. She could trust him. Beasley could trust him. The only person who might not be able to trust Dan Stevens was Dan Stevens. Still, he opened his mouth, and the invitation came stumbling out. "Go get me my drink. Get me a Diet Coke." The woman's demand came just moments before her husband was about to sit down. She continued talking on her cell phone, ignoring her own children. Dan looked over to see if he could make eye contact with the husband, to perhaps tell him that things could get better. Jacob and Peter outgrew their combative stage. Certainly the two children kicking each other's shins under their table would grow into a more loving stage.
"I brought my hiking boots, my staff, and some hiking clothes with me," Beasley told the pastor. "I'd love for you to take me after lunch."
Now he was committed. He really didn't want to be, but he was definitely committed to hiking into the woods with a woman other than his wife. He wondered if maybe James would be willing to be a chaperone. Did he really need a chaperone? He stared off into space. More properly, he watched as the family situation at the newcomer's table deteriorate just as surely as he thought his marriage was about to go down the drain because of Beasley.
"I was up awfully early," Dan tried to excuse himself. "I may want to take a nap instead."
"That's okay," Beasley assured him. "I have work to do. I can wait on your front porch, get done what has to be done, then go off on my own if you're still napping." There was no escape. The woman wanted to stay with him for some reason. "I can see by the look on your face that somehow you're uncomfortable by my presence." Beasley furrowed her eyebrows and put her hands, palms up on the table in front of Dan. "I was taking a few days off at a resort about an hour away when I got the call. Because you're a suspect, you can't be left alone. I'm sorry, it has to be this way." Dan was about to say something directly to her when their pizzas arrived. Beasley asked the server to box their order to go, Just as the pizzas left the table, Dan caught sight of someone else coming in the front door. It's him. Before either of them could react, the newcomer was back out the door and sprinting across the parking lot. Dan watched as he jumped on a motorcycle and roared off in a trail of dust. Beasley came up behind Dan. "That's the guy?" she asked. "That's the guy," he confirmed. "Did you happen to catch what he was riding?" "It was a motorcycle. Someone's V-twin, I guess." "Get back inside and get the pizza," she told him. "I better report this." Dan met the bewildered server, collected the pizzas and the drinks, then met Beasley at her car. "We don't have much to go on," Beasley reported. "The state police have been notified, but..." Dan heard it too. There was a roar coming down the road, heading in the same direction as the man who'd just been at BJ's. A large group of motorcycles roared past, each of them emitting an ear-splitting roar as they passed by. Dan looked back at the restaurant. He saw a couple of small faces glued to one of the windows watching the parade go by. "At least they've gotten a break from having to listen to their mother," Dan remarked while he got in the car. When he was settled in, Beasley had him hold the pizza boxes on his lap for the ride back to the cabin. The warmth and the aroma took him back to happier times. That's the end of Chapter 11. Chapter 12 next week, we're actually going to be back with Emily, back in Magnolia, before Beasley and Reverend Dan get over to the back over to the cabin for the rest of their day. That's really about it. Nothing else going on here. I would like to thank you for staying with us for these 12 weeks now, or 11 weeks now. And until next time, we'll be seeing you.